This is the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Three-pointer.
Oh, Hutchins! Double honor!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Oh! LeBron James with no regard for human life!
Welcome to the AA Podcast.
Madden, what are you still doing here?
Here's Matt Yoder.
With the NBA playoffs underway, we're pleased to welcome back to the show NBA on TNT analyst Chris Webber. Chris, welcome back. Thanks for being with us today on the AA Podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Chris, one of our favorite guests. First, let's get your take on the big news today that broke out of Oklahoma City. Scott Brooks out as head coach. How surprised are you by that news? I mean, we've heard rumblings about his job security. And I guess the bigger question is, who do you think could come in there and help take that team to the next level and maybe convince Kevin Durant to stay? We've heard Kevin Ollie's name, Billy Donovan. I mean, not only just the implications of taking over a team that has been a contender, but when you add in all the uncertainty with Kevin Durant's future, that is a big, big job that is now open.
Yeah, it's such a big learning curve when you come in. And if I'm Kevin Durant, he's been a long time in the league, and Russell Westbrook, I'm not playing for a college coach. That's just not going to happen. I don't know when success has happened when you've had a college coach go in with veterans. It didn't happen. It hasn't happened with others. So to suggest Billy Donovan there with two veterans, I think I don't think it's that smart. Guys do not want to play for somebody that they're going to have to teach, and then all the pressure's going to be on them. I think that, you know, you're going to probably have to look at some veteran coaches, but I think that this move is mostly to try to keep and intrigue and entice and seduce Westbrook and Durant to stay. And I think they're going to have their hands full. We all know that Durant is from the Baltimore area. The Wizards are there. Westbrook's a California guy and different markets. The fact that the media got cute last year and from a city that never had any professional sports to say that their star didn't show up. I thought that was the nail in the coffin, because you could go to other places and be treated by worse, and then have a small town place just keep dogging you when they've never had anything before you. And so knowing those guys, knowing a little bit of the situation and everything, I just think this is probably proactive by OKC trying to keep those guys in town. But who knows what's going to happen. It's going to be a long year next year while we all speculate where they're going.
A couple interesting things to pull out of that response. First, you mentioned, you know, maybe guys tuning out a college coach. What about a guy like Kevin Ollie, you know, Fred Hoiberg, guys that have a lot of experience in the league but have made their names as coaches in the college game? Do you think that would be a problem too, with having them come in, learning the NBA game as a coach? Does that veteran experience in the league mean something?
Well, you know, no, let's talk about Brad Stevens. He's doing a wonderful job, but he's with a young team. He doesn't, the only veteran he has is Gerald Wallace over there, Gerald loves him. But, you can't come into a new system, and when you have a learning curve, how can I expect you to lead me when all the pressure is on me as a player?
Mm-hmm.
So you think more pressure is on Billy Donovan than Kevin Durant?
Yeah.
I know everyone loves Kevin Ollie. Kevin Ollie is a dear friend of mine. And I do believe that Kevin Ollie could make that transition. But a rookie coach, you do not want to make that transition. Not with guys that want to win a championship.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You start off like exposure with those guys, you know. But no, when you have guys that are serious all-stars, you don't want someone coming in learning on your time. Those 2 or 3 years of wasted years because of a bad call, because of not adjusting in the playoffs, or 3 more years, you don't have a shot at the championship. And I doubt, maybe Kevin Ollie, because of the respect that he garnered in the locker room, just like I wish Brian Shaw would have gone to the Lakers. But besides that, I don't see anything else.
Yeah, that's interesting, that matching up of where the team and the star players are and where the coach is. Like you said, Brad Stevens, I mean, we'll get into the Celtics-Cavs series in a bit, what he's done with that young team. But as you mentioned, stars like Westbrook, Durant, they want to win a title now, so bringing in someone that could deliver that immediately. The other thing that I wanted to pull out there, Chris, was the impact of the media's role on those stars, Westbrook, Durant. We know that throughout the season, both players have really expressed their issues with the media. Do you think that really has that big of an impact on where they might go in the future? And I know probably what we're both thinking about is that headline a couple years ago when the local paper called Kevin Durant, I think it was Mr. Unreliable, in the postseason. And I can imagine that that is something that would stick with a star player, with that coming from the local paper.
Well, yeah, you know, I can't speak for Kevin, but if you have the same beat writer that don't believe in you, what you say is, okay, I'll go somewhere else, and then, you know, we'll see how you do in your lean years of not winning, and with whether you get, reassigned somewhere, or whether you have to write about a bad team. You know, I think it's, it's almost like the quality of life. If the quality of life in smaller places seem to be better because you don't have that constant unnecessary heat on you all the time. Not from basketball, I mean from other things, like why you heard guys didn't want to go to New York or other places. And so if you bring that to smaller places, then it's better to go live in a big place. It's better to go live in a city where restaurants are open after 9:30. It's better to go places where they have public transportation or your family can do things where they come visit you, or your kids have maybe more options just because of the city being larger. So I think where the small cities had the love from players because it was a family-type atmosphere, you lose it once you're trying to be like everyone else with headlines that don't even make sense. And the headline of Durant didn't even make sense, and he's one of the best players himself. So that, for them to do that to him, if he takes that personal, I wouldn't care. I do think all those things, in full context, not just one, but all those things play a part in the decision making.
When we talked last year, you were doing some work in the studio in the broadcast booth for Turner. You've now moved into maybe the lead analyst role at the network, I think it's fair to say. How do you feel like you've grown in the last year as a broadcaster?
I don't know how I've grown over the last year, but the last 3 years, I feel I've really grown. I'm in Boston now, and I remember, I think it was 4 years ago, or 5 years ago, I got to do the Boston Celtics series with Dick Stockton. And doing those games with him, I learned so much from a professional like he is, how to prepare. And then you have Kevin Harlan. I've gotten to learn from him how to prepare, how to work through and get things done. And then now being able to work with Marv. So I'm just blessed that guys like Reggie Miller, I watched him take notes, and that's how, I took notes. I'm just really happy with Steve Kerr. I got to be around him and watch how he did games. And so I feel that I'm getting better, and I always want to improve. But I noticed improvement over the last 3 years as opposed to one, because it's just been something that really had my nose to the ground. I knew no one believed in me, and I wanted to prove it. And hopefully I'm getting a chance to do that.
What has it been like this year working with Marv? How has that chemistry and relationship grown with him? I mean, obviously such an iconic figure in this industry, and really, I mean, the voice of basketball for the last few decades.
Yeah, Marv is great. He's a great setup man, just like Ernie Johnson. All these guys I've gotten to work with just made me so much better. So I would just say he's great. A lot of things I love talking to Marv about, besides when we're working, is the history of the game. Marv has an extensive history because he's seen everybody. And loving to talk to him and get in conversations in the morning. I know he probably gets sick of me, but I want to talk about every old player and who would he compare them to today and who is the loudest arena, those type of things. And so I don't know if he knew I was that big of a basketball fan, but we have a great relationship. And his patience, I really appreciate his patience over the year with me because he's worked with the best, for his whole life. So for him to kind of get the new kid coming up, I'm sure for him, slowed him down for a second. But I'm very happy that he's professional, very happy that he took me serious. He encourages me, and he expects great things from me. And when you have a teammate, a coach that expects great things from you, and you've seen what they've done, it kind of sets the bar higher for yourself and makes you want it even that much more. So I'm very, very thankful for him bringing a hand out and really showing me the ropes in this.
You worked games at the NCAA tournament for the first time this year for CBS and Turner. What was that experience like for you, being around the college game once again and being able to call those games and get back in that NCAA tournament environment?
It was cool. know, I love calling the games, and I love listening to guys call it, and I love listening to guys that actually played and had some type of an impact in those games. And so I just wanted to try to show or to let people know the things that I never see, the stuff that people really can't talk about because they didn't play. So what are parents saying to their kids? How the flight happened for them to get there? What's going on through a kid's mind after the game? You know, whenever I would hear commentators act like the world is over because a kid lost the game, it was always the dumbest perspective to me because I'm like, maybe even talk about that first game. It was like, someone said something like, oh my God, what are these kids are going to do? And I'm like, well, hopefully they'll have kids, grandkids, get a job, you know, love their families, you know, and hopefully I can put the seriousness and the non-seriousness of the sport into perspective and not just, and show, you know, how much it means to these kids. But it was awesome. It was a wonderful opportunity to commentate, and I was very happy to get that opportunity.
All right, let's dive into the playoffs now, and let's take a real deep look at this Celtics-Cavaliers series. You've been in transit from Cleveland to Boston, game two in the books last night, game three coming up. Tell me, Chris, what's been more impressive to you so far, this Cavs team and the way LeBron James has really had his hand on the pulse of his club so far, I mean, knowing what they need at the right time, game two, scoring 15 points in the fourth quarter last night. So has it been that, or has it been this play of this young Celtics group really competing with the Cavs head-to-head for long, long stretches? I mean, they were in game one for a while, built up a lead. Game two, same thing there until the end in the fourth quarter. Which side has impressed you more?
I think the Celtics have impressed me more. You know, if you have a championship aspirations and you are the Cavs, you should definitely be happy about what you're doing. You should definitely feel good. But, you know, you have to beat the Celtics to get to the next round. And so, you know, any championship team that's impressed with their first round victory, you know, to me, it doesn't, you know, it's a long more way to go. But for the Celtics, who have the number one leading scoring bench, who has had 22 players this year, approximately almost three different, you know, teams, so to speak, it's just been incredible watching those guys play. They're mentally tough. They stay in the games, and of course, they're not as good as the Cleveland team, so they're going to miss shots. They're going to break down at times, but there's not from any mental letdowns, and that's what's impressed me the most about this Boston team. I know Isaiah Thomas just has the heart of a giant, and guys play so well, and as I said before, Gerald Wallace, you know, he talks to me about how well the guys get along and how great they listen to Coach Stevens, but just really impressed with them being on the road as loud as Cleveland was with LeBron James, with all the great players they had, and to hold their own in the midst of that, I really was impressed.
And with the Celtics team, you mentioned Isaiah Thomas. He's been the big acquisition, but 22 players. It's amazing what Brad Stevens has done with all these guys coming in and out, but it seems like they finally kind of settled on this young nucleus. I know there was a graphic during last night's game that looked at all of these guys, Smart, Olynyk, Sullinger, Thomas, Zeller, even Evan Turner's kind of resurrecting his career a bit. Just to see all of these guys come together to put in a good showing against Cleveland, we've had so much attention on the rebuilding projects with the Knicks and with the Lakers, yet here's maybe the marquee franchise in the NBA doing this giant retool, the likes of which we've maybe never seen before. And it's kind of flown under the radar a bit. Do you think, Chris, that there's enough talent there in that young core, that nucleus, that Boston can take a step forward, compete with Cleveland this year, and then maybe over the next few years with this core, take some more steps forward and become a legit Eastern Conference contender?
Yeah, no, they're not going to compete with Cleveland this year. They're building character. There's no way they're going to beat Cleveland. Cleveland is light years ahead. They have LeBron James. They know what they want. They've been together for this reason. But they're saying that in about 2 or 3 years, this Boston team is going to be my favorite.
Really?
They may not have one player that's going to be on their roster. They have a great team right now. But I don't want to misquote it. I don't have my notes with me, but I forgot it's a ridiculous number of first-round picks they have. If you look at next year, they have their first-round pick, Brooklyn's first-round pick. You know, they're going to be 15 million under the cap. They have probably the most potential of any team, I feel, because of what Ainge has done there in his executive office. He's done some great trades. He's bamboozled a couple people. I don't know what he's doing over there, but he wants to have pictures of people because he has a lot of pictures and information of people because he has a lot of draft picks in his stock, and I just think they're going to be really good. He does it smart the right way. While everyone else tried to go and rent a star, they've just gone with the people that they had and hired a young coach, and Coach Stevens, who many people probably wouldn't have believed in, and let him grow with the organization. So I'm a big Celtics fan of what they've been doing, and I do expect big things out of them. Probably in about 3 years, I really expect all of it to have come together for some positive things here in Boston.
That's going to be really fascinating to watch, especially in this era where you think that teams need to sign a max superstar to compete, to see what Boston is doing, to see what Atlanta's done this year. It's really remarkable, and I think it's really great for the league to see these teams come up with these different rebuilding plans, and that a team like Boston can assemble all this young talent, all these draft picks, and have a bright future is really good for the game. All right, let's move to the team that everyone wants to talk about. That is, of course, the Cavs, the true contenders in this series, the team playing for a title this year. And I think, Chris, to me, watching the first two playoff games of Kyrie Irving, we're on the cusp of seeing something special. I mean, we may look back at this 2015 postseason as his coming out party. 55 points against the Blazers, 57 on the road against the Spurs, maybe the two most scintillating performances of the regular season, 30 and 26 in his first two playoff games. You mentioned the history of the game and talking with Marv about that. I'm going to throw out a comparison to you. I wonder if this Kyrie Irving-LeBron James partnership could be something similar to what we saw with Dwayne Wade and Shaquille O'Neal in Miami, where a veteran guy comes in, helps a young team get over the line, but in that process, that young star really blossoms into one of the game's elite before our eyes. And I just wonder if Kyrie Irving has a postseason in him this year like Dwayne Wade did in 2006 with the Miami Heat.
Definitely. I think when we look back, we'll be able to say that Kyrie Irving was just as good as Dwayne. I can't say that now, being a Dwayne in the few finals and has done his thing, but I know that this is how guys want to transition. I know this is what Kobe wished that he had, a young fella to come in. He'd still be the best player, but on any given night, he allows you to be the best player. When I watch LeBron play, I just see him smile sometimes, you know, to himself, like, man, I don't have to do all this. He has a ball handler. I believe that Kyrie is the best. It's going to end up being the best player that he's played with. And so that's why I think the future is bright. He has a guy that ball handles for him, so he doesn't have to keep the ball in his hand. That's the biggest thing. Kyrie Irving's jump shot and passing is probably the most underrated. And when you look at this team, I believe that this team will be light years ahead of Miami because in the future, because of guys like Mozgov, because of him inside. They didn't necessarily have that in Miami. And so I do think this is what LeBron wants. I do think that Kyrie has what it takes to keep going into the playoffs. So I wouldn't be surprised, let's say, if they made it to the championship. Let's say they won the championship. That's a long way away. But if all of that happened, I wouldn't be surprised if Kyrie was the MVP of that series. Wow. I don't think LeBron really cares about the personal. I don't think LeBron cares about the personal accolades. You know, the other night, he took over at 15 in the fourth quarter. The first night, though, he let Kyrie get off to say, hey, this is your show. And I think he knows that LeBron knows that he will always show up and he will always be there ready. And I think what he's doing now is giving the guys the confidence so that they have that same trust in themselves so that when it gets late in the game, it doesn't matter who takes that shot between me and Kyrie. But I don't look at them as a big three. It's he and Kyrie that run that team. And it's he, Kyrie, and the crew. And I think the sky's the limit for them.
It's a really interesting statement to make, Chris, because obviously if you look at Kyrie and LeBron as a big two, that leaves out Kevin Love, and everyone has been discussing his role, his future. Can Cleveland win a title if he's just kind of an auxiliary player to the Kyrie and LeBron show? Can they win a title if he puts up 16 a night in the postseason or if he has to be on the bench in the fourth quarter? Can it really be the big 2.5? I mean, is that enough for Cleveland this year?
You know, I do think it can be enough. I don't think Kevin Love is not in the big three because he's not good enough. I don't think that he's being included or he's embracing this role. I don't know where the disconnect is there. But yes, they're good enough with Kyrie and LeBron leading them. You know, Kyrie's one of three players to have over 55 in consecutive, you know, in a season, consecutive games of 55 or more than one game of 55 in a season when you look at what he's done. So, yeah, I wish they would give the ball to Kevin Love around the free throw line and let him work there because he can pump fake, he can shoot, he can drive. I don't like the term stretch three. I don't like him being out there as a stretch three. The defense can just take off every play if the ball is on the other side because, you know, it may not swing back across. But they are good enough to win. They have three-point shooting. They have Tristan Thompson, who usually comes in the fourth quarter. He leads the league in offensive rebounds. So he's going to control the boards. And you have Mozgov, who's just a beast inside there. So, yeah, I do think they have enough, but I think other teams have enough, too. And so I think it's still wide open as Duke will win.
One more on the Cavs. You mentioned one of the real unsung guys, and I think not just on that team, but in the league as a whole, and that is Tristan Thompson. His ability and his ferociousness on the offensive glass is just something that's special. I mean, to watch him beat two, three guys and somehow find a way, it's like just the ball is magnetically attached to him. As far as role players go across the league and across this postseason, could he be one of those really influential guys off the bench that plays a pivotal role in helping his team win a title?
Anytime you get three offensive rebounds a game, you give your team three extra possessions. It usually turns into a three-pointer in that fourth quarter with long rebounds. Yeah, you know, I think him and Jimmy Butler, they did the best Kenny Rogers ever. They know when to hold them, know when to bet on themselves. They were asked if they wanted to sign big contracts. We're talking about big contracts. And they both said, no, thank you. I'm worth more. Everyone else thought they were crazy, and guess what? At the end of the season, those contracts that they turned down, they're going to be proud that they did turn down because they're going to make so much more. So, yeah, I think his impact definitely will help. He's making the most of this season.
Kenny Rogers reference. That's pretty impressive, Chris. That's pretty impressive. All right. Elsewhere in the East, I want to ask you, can you recall a number one seed getting as little attention for what they've done as the Hawks? I mean, Coach of the Year, East top seed, most wins in franchise history, yet it always seems like, I mean, and not just in the playoffs, throughout the entire season, you're kind of always looking elsewhere for stories, for headlines, for angles, for buzz, just not there in Atlanta, and it really is almost in that regard, kind of like the Eastern version of what the Spurs have been all these years.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is from the comments that Danny Ferry made, and you know, about people not wanting to talk about the comments he made, you really can't talk about the Hawks. So I think all that plays together. Having stayed in Atlanta and knowing how great the city feels around the team, but how the community is still upset about things that were said, I think all that plays in it. And no, I can't remember a number one team that led the league in assists, played so well, had a number one 3-point shooter in Kyle Korver, shot 49, 50. Had some really great players in Millsap and guys inside share the ball there. The example of great basketball and camaraderie and chemistry. No, I haven't seen a number one not get as much attention as that. But being that they are San Antonio South, I like to call them, they should embrace being under the radar because that's what San Antonio does. And if they are truly in the footprint of a team like that, that's what comes with the territory. You have to stay work-oriented as far as and not necessarily result-based. And so as long as they know that they're going to be the underdog, they don't get respect. If they play that card, nobody believes in this. We have to prove it. I've seen that work for a lot of teams, and so hopefully they use that to their advantage.
One last series I wanted to touch on, and it's out west. That's Golden State, New Orleans. First, Anthony Davis in his first postseason. What have you seen from him, and what's the ceiling on that guy? If we talk about Kyrie Irving maybe surpassing Dwayne Wade, what can Anthony Davis be? And then second, is Golden State your favorite out west with what you've seen throughout the season and the first two games as well?
Yeah, Anthony Davis, I just really love his game. He's exciting. He's athletic. I think the sky's the ceiling. I think the sky's the limit for him. When you look at his game, I think he can be a more athletic Tim Duncan with a better outside jump shot. definitely love his IQ, his body, his quickness. He's just a freak of nature and a great leader. And I think the sky's the limit for him. In the West Coast, I still believe San Antonio can win. I did a game 2 years ago or last year when San Antonio walked Golden State down when Golden State was up 23 at home against them. The playoffs are a funny thing in which everything that worked during the season no longer works anymore because the team is only focused on you for a week. It's not like they come into town and play the minimum basics and get through the game and then have to go to Boston next. They're only focused on you. And so when you get Popovich time to adjust and do things like that, I think that's where you get in trouble. And so for the West, I still think it's pretty wide open until after the first round and we see how things boggle down. But no one's respected Memphis, man. And I just think that's just a big mistake. And is the NBA the best 400 players and not a city or a beautiful style of play or a beard or 3-point shot? Those things aren't what when championships is those teams. And so I just try to make sure I look at all that in its full context. And when I do that, I take the field over any one team.
Yeah, that's really interesting too with Memphis too. I mean, that's another underrated team. With Golden State, I mean, obviously you have a lot of experience out there. For that fan base, that atmosphere in the postseason, is that the best playoff atmosphere that we have in the NBA right now? I mean, and even if you look back throughout the history of the postseason, how would you compare that atmosphere to maybe some of the other great playoff arenas in league history?
Yeah, the best playoff atmosphere by far that I've ever witnessed in person was Sacramento against the Lakers. It was just ridiculous. I would hear Kyle Bell days later.
That's going to keep the home fans happy there, Chris. That's a good choice.
No, that's just true. I don't have to lie about fans. It's just true. They're like the Duke crazies. That's how Sacramento was. That's not how they are now. That was 2002, so that's a long time ago. But when you talk about the G-State, Golden State fans, from my rookie year when I played there, they have consistently been the best fans in the NBA. Consistently. Win or lose, consistently. Whether it was Don Nelson and his eighth-seeded team beating the number one seed Dallas, it was crazy. Or whether it was them losing in the first round. So, well, actually, they didn't even get to make it to the playoffs for so many years. So I really have always embraced Oakland. That's a wonderful place, and those fans there are by far the best and the most consistent, in my opinion, in the NBA.
I think everyone would love to see. I mean, if there's a lot of deserving fan bases out there, but the way that Golden State crowd supports their team, what that title would mean to the basketball fans in the Bay Area and Oakland, I think there wouldn't be a lot of disappointed people around the country that are basketball fans if Golden State could finish the job and win a title. All right, we like to get everyone out on a prediction. I know we're really early on in the postseason, but right now, give me your pick for the finals this year. Who's making it out of the East and who's making it out of the West?
I'm going to stick with who I picked at the beginning of the season. I'll just do that. San Antonio's down 1-0 right now, and Chicago's playing. Well, I picked San Antonio and Chicago. I'll stick with those guys in the finals. But like I said, everybody from Memphis to the Clippers to all these teams, it's I love the parity. I love the fact that it is really 1 year. I can't. Besides what I said early in the year, making the adjustments and pick someone else now because the coaching is so good. The adjustments are great. Teams are playing well. The home courts is stepping up. So, I'm going to stick with San Antonio and Chicago.
It's really fascinating, too. I mean, this year, usually going into the postseason, there might be 2, 3, maybe 4 teams max that can have a legitimate chance to win a title. But this year, I mean, you've got Atlanta, Chicago, Cleveland in the East. So many teams out west. I mean, from Golden State to San Antonio, Memphis, the Clippers, just so many contenders, and that's going to make this 2015 NBA postseason definitely one to remember. All right, our thanks to C-Web, Chris Weber, for joining us on the AA podcast. Follow him on Twitter at RealChrisWeber. Catch him on TNT's coverage of the NBA playoffs up through the Eastern Conference Finals. Chris, thanks a lot for joining us and spending the time on a travel day. Enjoy the rest of the postseason.
Thanks,